How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Sports Zone, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. This goes on and on, the most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. There's no way that we're going to get into everything we've got coming up on the show today, but we're going to do the best we can. Number one, we've got two big guests coming up today. We're going to be joined in the second segment of the show, about 20 minutes after, by El Wapo himself. Boss Rutan is going to be on the show here today. We're going to be talking about all sorts of subjects. That's going to be a lot of fun. And then in the final segment, we're going to be joined by the Doctor of Lucha himself. Steve Sims is going to be on the air. And Steve Sims can talk all sorts of subjects, including what's going on with La Sombra and his signing with WWE. All of the news in Mexico. We've got, of course, the big AAA end-of-the-year show coming up with a new match. Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Johnny Mundo to crown a new AAA Mega Champion, the belt that was once held by Alberto Del Rio. We can talk to him about that. And, of course, in the opening segment, Mike Sempervivi will be here as always. And we've got plenty of news to talk about in terms of Charlotte Flair, the angle on Raw Monday, which has been the most talked about angle of the entire week. And we're not only going to talk about it, but WWE issued a statement yesterday. We're going to tell you what they said about this whole angle. And there's a lot to say about what they said. I'm not sure if you've seen it. It's on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. So all of that today, plus if we have time, we'll take your phone calls, emails, text messages, the whole nine yards. It's going to be a very, very busy day today here on the program as we wrap up the week. Of course, we will be here Sunday, because it is Survivor Series, our usual Survivor Series pre-show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Back in just a moment with more Observer Live on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Indeed, it is Wrestling Observer Live here, everybody. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Too much stuff to get into here today. There's so much news. Let's not waste any time. Mike, the biggest story since Monday's Raw is this whole thing that has gone down with Charlotte and WWE. Paige was just an individual involved, so can't really say that she's responsible for anything here, but this is the big story, and WWE yesterday decided that they were going to issue a statement on what happened. And I'm not sure if you've seen this statement or not, Mike. I'm sure you have.
I have.
Up the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. I want to read this to everybody, and I want you to think about what it means. WWE here says, and this is a quote, "Subject matter this personal is only approved as a result of the strong advocacy of the talent themselves. Notwithstanding that, WWE is ultimately responsible for what airs in its programming."
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you? Because I know what it means to me.
I think in layman's terms, it would be a bus toss. It's either a bus toss or it's the truth. If it's the truth, I would say there's a lot of explaining to do from the Flair side, but I think if that would be the case, I don't think anybody would want to hear it. But if from what we've heard is 100% true, coming from Ric Flair, coming from the side of the Flairs, if that's the case, then WWE looks extra bad by continuing and doubling down on this and bringing it up on SmackDown and issuing a statement like that. They just flat do if that's the case. And again, if there's, you know, I guess in a way there could be advocacy. I mean, advocacy can be, you know, a loose term there where it's, are you okay with this? And you feel pressured into going, I guess. And that could be taken as, well, that's advocacy coming from the person doing it. It's I'm surprised they did. I'm surprised they mentioned anything at all. I guess maybe they've gotten that many cards and letters, or maybe they heard from a sponsor. I don't know what it would be. It didn't seem like it was that. It just seemed like they guess they wanted to throw something out there and address it. But by doing that, you've put it back on Charlotte now that she was the one that was all for this. You make her now a liar. Now, she didn't come out. She has never come out and said that she has any problem with the storyline. She can't. She works for the company. But the people that are speaking seemingly for her, indirectly at least, they are saying she wasn't for this at all. So somebody's lying. Or there's a blur over what advocacy actually would mean and what being for the thing actually meant.
The word advocacy is the one that is so weird to me, in the sense that you want to know what I think really happened. You want to know my theory on how this whole thing went down. I haven't watched it yet, but I should. There is an episode of Table for Three that is available on the WWE Network, and apparently there is an episode with Charlotte, and I'm sure I'll probably get a million text messages about this from people who have seen it. And I remember that when it aired, somebody in the company emailed me and they said, when you watch this thing, you're going to see a writer getting an idea. And I think that, I don't know this, I just, if anybody watched it, just alert me if I'm totally out to lunch about this, but this is the impression that I've gotten. She made a comment about Reed during Table for Three, and somebody on the WWE writing crew must have seen it and come up with this idea. And so the idea was presented, and there were people backstage that thought it was a good idea. There were people backstage that thought it was a bad idea. And Charlotte Flair, Ashley Flair, from listening to Ric Flair, she is not in the position to go to WWE and say, I don't want to do this idea. She wants to be a team player. She's the champion. Like everybody there, she's walking on eggshells. And at the end of the day, the bottom line of all of this, by the way, is that it doesn't matter if Hunter or Stephanie or Charlotte or Rick or Elizabeth or anybody in the company thought that this was a good idea. At the end of the day, the person that made the final decision was Vince McMahon. And Vince McMahon greenlit it, and it ended up on television. Now, whatever the story is, I want to say one more thing about this, because this is very important. In this statement, regardless of who they put the blame on, it says right here, WWE is ultimately responsible for what airs in its programming. What do you make of that line, Mike?
Well, I would make of that line that even though we'll try to pass the buck ultimately on no matter what happens, we are the ones that have got to answer for this if sponsors or anybody else comes calling, and we are already lining up people to fire just in case this gets worse.
Okay.
I don't think they're doing that, but that's what I would hear that and go, okay, there's some covering ass going on here, and we have that out there, and you know, if this gets worse, we're going to take action.
Okay. Well, what I make of this, and maybe I'm wrong, is that they are essentially blaming Charlotte for coming up with the idea, or at least not shooting down the idea, like she would have any say in this matter. But at the end, they are saying we take responsibility for it airing on television, and it somewhat comes off as an apology, right? Isn't that how you make that last line?
Yes, it would.
Okay. If that is the case, if they are apologizing for putting it on television, which that's how it reads to me, why was it recapped on SmackDown? If they are so sorry that it made it to television, and they're sending out a statement which essentially apologizes for it being on television, why did it air again on SmackDown? Can anyone answer that question for me?
Well, they already had the show in the bag, Brian.
So like when Seth Rollins went down with his surgery and they managed to get in an edit about his injury, there's nothing else they could have put in. In fact, somebody tweeted me. They had it like the, I don't remember what the sponsor was, but it was like the Power Zone moment of the week or something like that.
Well, there's let's see, what would another excuse be? There didn't seem to be that much backlash to it. It seems to only be isolated from a few people on social media that we have to deal with.
This person here says, I texted you about table for three twice this week, but you had audio issues. Well, as power issues is what it actually was. And this person says, Brian, she did make a quick comment on that table for three, but to think a story could be drawn from a small comment shows the lack of sanity that WWE has.
Well, to be fair, like, there have been lots of awful, horrible, bad ideas and that have been tasteless that have been thrown out there by bookers for years and have made it to air for years. It's not about the fact that it came up or even possibly how to even use something like that in the storyline. It's that when you probably take a step out of the bubble and you take a big breath of fresh air and you stand back and you look at it, what you have painted on the mural, maybe it's not the best way to go for a lot of the reasons that we have talked about over the last several days, whether it be how he died, whether it be the emotion that elicits from the parents, whether it be because he was not a quote unquote pro wrestling figure the same way a Paul Bearer or somebody like that would be, with all of those things. And just the fact that it was just poor hotshot, bad TV, and it was not acted very well, and all of that other stuff on top of it, that's what you actually have to do sometimes. And they just didn't do it here. And no matter who's at fault, and everybody's probably a little at fault, it doesn't matter. It was bad taste, and WWE probably shouldn't be doubling down on this. It should just frankly go away. They should concentrate on what the girls did well, which was actually beat the hell out of each other at the end, or at least give the perception of such. And let's go on with Sunday, and let's go on from there.
You know, the irony of the whole thing is, at the end of the day, the storyline did not get Charlotte any more over, but the way they went about the storyline and everything that went on backstage, she's now probably going to be a huge babyface on Sunday. Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and one of the biggest and most charismatic and most handsome stars in the history of mixed martial arts is here on the line today, El Wapo Boss Rutan. Boss, what's going on?
Doing great. Thank you for that. I'm feeling much better now.
You sound surprised that we pointed out how handsome you were.
Yes, because I'm getting up there in age now, you know. I mean, I'm getting the Sean Connery look, though, is what people say, which is one of my wishes was that when I was young. So that's a good thing.
Now, Boss, let's start here with a very important topic. We're here to talk about Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm. And it is pretty much universally accepted that this is the biggest upset in the history of UFC. Now, you've been everywhere. You've been all over the world. You've fought everywhere. Where would you rank this in terms of the biggest upsets ever in history anywhere?
On top, because it is. Everybody thought she was unbeatable. Let's face it, I mean, one person went to the third round, the rest she cleaned everybody out in one round. Most of the time, everything under a minute. I mean, one time is a fluke, two times could be a fluke, three times, okay, but doing it constantly, yeah, she was a superstar. You know, of course she still is. You know, a lot of people already spitting her out. They said, whoa, we're talking about Ronda Rousey. Let's just first find out if something was going on, because at the weigh-in, she was really behaving weird. I mean, she got out of control for pretty much no reason, and that's actually a buddy of mine was at my house, and we saw it, and he goes, dude, she's going to lose. There's something wrong with her. She's absolutely, her mind is not thinking clear. This is crazy. And I heard that the mother wasn't there. You know, she's a little superstitious because that whole feud that went on with the mom and Edmund, her coach, you know, she told her mother that she didn't want to leave because she always won her fights with Edmund, that she doesn't want to leave that, you know, because that's a winning combination. So we don't know what went on in her head, maybe a bad weight cut. Never mind that, all that, but even if that would be true, I would say Holm would have probably still beaten her because Holm was really on fire.
Boss, how is it, and it's nobody can actually be inside Ronda Rousey's head right now, but what is it like for a fighter to have that kind of first major defeat? And Ronda Rousey's having it on such a large scale right now. And obviously she's lost during judo, but there has been nothing like this. How damaging is this to a fighter's psyche? And what do you have to do as far as being in their inner circle, as far as helping them back along again and getting some confidence back, which surely has been shot a little bit now?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, we see this with many guys. The biggest example, of course, always comes up. It's Mike Tyson. You know, after he got knocked out, people, okay, he is human. Now everybody knows. So now all the other fighters are going to gun for Rousey as well. And for her, in the back of her mind, now she also realizes she is human. I don't know if she ever was dropped in training, but getting knocked out like this, you know, knowing that you can be knocked out, if that stays in the back of the mind, that could be very bad for the next fight. But you know what? We all know that she's very headstrong. You know, she's very dominant. There was a lot of stuff going on. On Inside MMA 3 weeks ago, I said, you know, she has to stop doing all the other stuff. She's not focusing anymore. I mean, she's doing movies, commercials, talk shows, every magazine, covers. Everywhere I come, I see Rousey, Rousey, Rousey. Everybody's talking about her. She needs to focus on the one thing that made her famous, because that is the most important. Once she starts losing, all the other stuff that she has now, that will disappear. So let's stay focused. And maybe that was one of the key ingredients to failure in this case as well.
Now, there's a lot of things that went down here. There was the game plan. Holly Holm's game plan was the perfect game plan to beat Ronda Rousey. Rousey came in, and as you noted, she didn't appear to be herself. Maybe there was an injury that we don't know about. I don't know what's going on. A lot of personal issues, as you talked about. Edmund, the mom, her boyfriend, everything. Now, taking all of this into account, inevitably, unless she retires, they're going to fight again, maybe at UFC 200. And what is your analysis as to the chances of Ronda winning the second time? She is the favorite right now on the books, which has surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, she's going to have to change her game plan. You know, the game plan now was coming forward like she did in every other fight, and that's why it was so predictable for her opponent. You know, coming forward, and she thought that she was going to close that clinch. I thought that eventually she was going to get a takedown. It's 25 minutes if you spread it out over five rounds, and she's going to win. But now she's going to have to learn to let the opponent come to her. Maybe throw a fake, lazy strike. Hopefully the opponent counters. That's the moment you're going to shoot. I also would suggest for her to add some single legs and double legs to her repertoire, because the clinching, people find defenses now. The thing that Rousey of Holm did when she lifted her up, I go, man, that is the smartest thing ever, because as soon as she lifted her up, when she was almost been hip throat, Ronda's feet are not on the ground, and she needs her feet on the ground in order to throw you. So it was a very smart game plan what they did. Ronda's camp has to make sure she's going to go in and out and not following constantly the opponent, because that's not going to work, because they know now that's the blueprint to her defeating her.
You know, another interesting thing about it is you mentioned that she's got to get her down. There was a moment in the fight where Ronda not only got her down, but she was going for the arm bar and she didn't get it.
You know, the thing is this. We never knew from Holm that she was training mixed martial arts. And it's so dumb for us to think, because she's training at Winkle, John, and Jackson. You know, so I know 100% sure at the moment she decided to start mixed martial arts, she was probably already training in mixed martial arts. She just said never needed it, because she kept the fight on the feet and knocked her opponents out. So this time we saw, oh, wait a minute, she's actually pretty good there. So she will only get better. You know, she's still growing in that art. And boxing, well, that it will stay the same, and she knows now footwork is the key to success. I mean, it's going to be a hard one to beat. And if you look at the earlier two fights from Holm also, before that, she knocked a lot of people out, and everybody started doubting. She had one split decision win, one other decision win. They thought, hey, is she really shining? You know, she's not really the girl that she was before she went into the UFC. But I think they were just playing it safe. You know, just knowing that if she just keeps on winning, eventually she's going to get a title shot. And let's at the title shot, let's throw it all out there. And I think that's what happened.
Well, let's stay on Holm for a minute here. And obviously there's a lot of people wondering what was wrong with Rousey, but Holly Holm, she was getting paid to go in there and fight for a championship too. And she looked great in doing it. What now comes for Holly Holm in her camp? Obviously, she's had a lot of success in boxing. She's headlined her own pay-per-views before, so the spotlight is not that glaring on her. It's too much of a shock anymore, at least. And she's starting to do a little bit more media now and making appearances. How do you keep her grounded? Because she seems to be a very grounded, very focused person. But how do you make sure that she continues to stay on path right now and isn't due for a fall? Because we love to build people up and we love to tear them down again. So how does Holly Holm stay up there?
I don't.
Well, Holm already had, 16 world titles and 17 in total, 16 defenses. So she's been there. She knows already that she has to stay calm and everything stay relaxed because that's the key to victory. You know, we can't blame Rousey. I mean, nobody's in her shoes. You know, if everybody around you throws everything at you and your manager just takes on every job pretty much, oh, do this. I think you just have to have a manager that you can trust. You say, oh, they want to do a movie? Let's do that. When I'm done with fighting, you know, maybe that's a better idea because we don't want to lose here. We want to keep this perfect O. We want to keep it an O. So and that's the thing. And just pedal through. I don't think that you're going to see her in the public as much as she did with Ronda Rousey. You know, but the whole reason we're speaking about this is because of Rousey and because she did all those appearances and because she was a great fighter and still is, of course, a great fighter. And we got to hand that to her because she made it big.
Tonight, 1 hour early, Inside MMA, the Holly Holm Special Edition is taking place tonight, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific. Of course, Kenny Rice and Boss Rutten, who is on the show today, are going to look back at some of Holly Holm's greatest interviews from her various appearances on Inside MMA. They're going to be talking to Mike Winklejohn, Greg Jackson, getting the whole breakdown here tonight. And Boss, before you go, any other social media you'd like to plug?
You know, yeah, just watch us on Axis TV, also on the Twitter. I believe it's Axis Inside MMA. And, you know, yeah, my own Twitter. You know, it's always fun to follow me. It's at Boss Rutten MMA, and my Facebook is facebook.com/BossRutten. So that's pretty simple. And I have little updates here and there as well. I talk about little techniques. If I see something, for instance, in the UFC or other organization that I think they did wrong, I highlight something, and I show people at home what they should have done, you know. And that's about it. For the rest, I'm just sailing through everything and keep watching Inside MMA with our people.
Well, hey, before we let you go, one last question here. Any other special projects you've been working on of late? Any other big screen appearances, anything of that nature?
Yeah, there are some things in the works. You know, I don't want to talk about it yet. There's something with TV that I'm busy with, and also maybe a movie. But I'm just going to wait until, you know, we're going to sign. That's one thing I learned. They told me so many times before, people say, oh, you're going to be in this movie, and then I tell everybody, and then it's not going to happen. You know, and then in the end, when Here Comes the Boom started, I didn't tell a soul until I signed the contract. They say, hey, I got this movie, and what do you know? Suddenly it happened. So that became my motto now. I'm not going to say anything anymore until it actually happens.
Well, El Wapo, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. Inside MMA Holly Holm Special Edition. Access tonight, November 20th, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific. Boss, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, that's right. We'll be back in just a moment with more, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Semper Vivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And yes, the Doctor of Lucha is here on the air today, and we have a lot of news to talk about here. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad. Let's talk La Sombra. You were doing your column for Figure Four Weekly, which you do every week, available only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. And you made sure to mention that if he was not going to WWE, they did just about the best job of destroying someone's career that you had ever seen. Now, we found out he is going to WWE, so the rushed mask match with Atlantis, the breakup of Los Ingobernables, all of that now seems to make sense. Tell us about Sombra.
It does. I am guessing that now that we know this shoe has dropped and that he has signed with WWE NXT and will start up there, that he probably gave his notice back in August when they had the rushed when they started the Rush feud with Atlantis and came out with the press conference where they signed the contracts. So I'm guessing that actually he was very professional about it and had been offered something and had given notice quite a while ago. That now seems to make very good chronological sense that they did that. I'm just surprised. My theory on NXT is normally they tend to not bring in one, just announce one guy at a time. Isn't it more the trend these days that they bring in a class?
Well, it depends. Sometimes they bring in a class, and sometimes it's just a guy or two.
Well, they've brought in a very good guy. He's a very good worker. I have not heard anything that would indicate to me that he's going to be any sort of problem like Mystico was in the locker room. Very professional. He has a lot of pride, but to be that good at what you do, you have to have a lot of pride. But I think they're going to find they have a good employee. Whether they have a good English-speaking employee, though, is probably one of the great questions, because in that promotion, you've got to have some mic skills.
Steve, could this like you said, they sometimes will bring in a class. Sarah Stock's already there. I mean, how long could you, with his pride and with just seeing how things have gone and in the length of time that Alberto Del Rio was initially down there, how long do you think Sombra could be down there? And if you were to bring him up, I mean, how exactly do you bring him up? The mask is off. He is not as proficient in English as some other people, as a Sarah Stock or an Alberto Del Rio. So what then do you do to make sure
that this
doesn't fall
into... Well, of course, one of your answers could be that Sarah Stock is his mouthpiece, and that creates a very interesting, Canadian, Mexican, white, brown, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think that's what they'll do, but it's something they could do. I mean, I didn't think this Mex America, I'd never dreamed anything would come up like the Mex America stuff they're running now, which each week I see it makes me cringe a little more and more and more.
Well, I never thought to ask, because I just haven't thought about it. My hooks aren't into NXT where I really care about the inner workings of it all that much, but she was brought up to be a trainer, and it was like, there's a lot of women in this world you could get to come up and be trainers, and I know she does bodybuilding, I know fitness, I know that might be a reason that they may have been attracted to her, but why Sarah Stock as a trainer at NXT? Why her?
I think she got a lot of good recommendations. I think that when Sarah Del Rey was brought in, that when they first started discussing this idea of going away from the older Divas concept and getting to the new concept, her name repeatedly crept up as someone who's had a lot of experience in a lot of places, has seen things work under many different promotions, can do moves and can teach moves, and is a good person to hire on an employee basis.
Well, let's talk a little bit here about, let's go back to Sombra. Tell everybody about him, everything you can tell us in terms of height, weight, how well does he speak English, etc.
Well, he is the same, to the best of my knowledge, in reality, in their stocking feet, he's about the same height as Prince Devitt. He's, NXT, don't seem to be concerned with the height and weight qualifications as before. He at most would, at 5'6", 5'7", at most would weigh, I don't know what the real weight would be, 170, 185 maybe. He is very technically proficient. He is able to carry a match. I think he's better as a technico than a Rudo because of the moveset that he's got. But he's able to work as a base for almost anyone. He's had some experience working with people that are a little larger than himself, but certainly nobody of the size that you would see on the main roster of WWE. He has a lot of he has more charisma in the ring without his mask than I think he did with the mask. With the mask, he was... There was the locker room or the traits that people who follow him in Mexico thought was the mask made him look a lot more, I don't want to say plain or uncharismatic, but just made him look more generic, that he had to work harder to overcome with it. This is he will look unique amongst the people that are there with the current staff. Isn't it true that the Triple H and Vince are in at this time, and Lord knows they change all the time, but are really on looking at running it as almost as if it's his own promotion for a while?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like...
Not just the minor league of WWE?
Well, I mean, they're claiming that it's a separate brand, but I think everybody knows what it actually is, which is not a separate brand. But I guess the other question about him is, I guess Conan on the MLW podcast said something to the effect of, La Sombra was the one guy in Mexico that they felt met their qualifications. The one guy in the entire country of Mexico?
And I have heard that from more than one person. I've heard him say that. I know Dave has reported it from another source, from WWE source. And I think that there are other guys down there who would work fine. Hijo del Fantasma would work fine, or King Cuerno, as you prefer.
Oh, yeah, King Cuerno would be awesome.
Would be fine in NXT. He'd be fine in WWE. Tejano Jr., you know how big a mark I am for Tejano Jr. Tejano Jr. would need to learn a little more English, but he could work in any promotion in the world.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when I think about their qualifications, I mean, Tejano Jr. does not have the WWE body.
It may be. They never really looked at AAA too much, and they just looked at CMLL because when they were in Mexico City, the CMLL guys were the only, or the majority of the guys who went over there and actually tried to do workouts.
Yeah, but there's one problem with your theory.
More than one, you know, done workout for or auditions for years.
Yeah, but the problem with your theory is I know that there are WWE guys that have gone to Lucha Underground and they've seen the guys there and they've talked about the guys there. And
yeah, Ricochet.
Yeah, and didn't King Cuerno get a WWE tried at one point anyway?
He did, and that was the reason why, that was the main reason of reasons why CMLL kind of pulled back on their push for him, because they thought logically at the time that if Mystico was going and the rumors were circulating wild that, you know, an English-speaking guy like Mystico would be really valuable to us. This is what, 2010, 2011, in that area. Everybody was just looked around the locker room and said, "That's Hijo. You're describing Hijo del Fantasma." So we presume that WWE is going to come take him. And so they said, "We don't want to lose somebody in mid push and stuff like that." So that happened. But he's still young. He's still young. Eventually, I think he will be a crossover star in the U.S. and with whether it's WWE, NXT, TNA, somewhere. I think he has a very, very high ceiling, and his ability to speak English well enough is good. He doesn't have the promo capacity that Eddie Guerrero does, but, you know, there's not a lot of people that are able to make those 20-minute segments like he did with Ray Jr. and others, you know, fascinating. Look at how the 20-minute segments drag now.
Eddie also had the ability to have 10 years in the U.S. before he ended up. Actually, it was probably, how long was he in the U.S. before he went to WWE? 8 years?
Well, he's a U.S. native. I mean, so he wrestled everywhere.
I mean, WWE.
He wrestled everywhere, yeah.
Sure.
But, I mean, he was in WWE for many years.
Yeah. Now, on another topic here, because we got to talk about it, the Lucha Underground tapings have begun, and they did a bunch of shows. I think 4 shows they taped maybe last weekend, 2 or 4. And we're not going to give away any spoilers here.
I've seen the results from 2, and the thing that stood out to me was the fact that there didn't seem to be Spanish language announcers or Spanish language ring introduction.
Yes. Did you find anything out about that? Are they not on Unimas?
It is in this day and age, that is an easy thing to dub over. That is inexpensive and could be done. And it could be they simply didn't have the crew that they're going to have for – Conan wasn't there, Rey Mysterio Jr. wasn't there, and I think some other behind-the-scenes people weren't there for the first week of tapings. And it could be nothing more than they're just going to, you know, do it this weekend when everybody is there, and I think that's going to be the answer.
Is Mysterio going to definitely be there?
That's the $64,000 question, because there are so many other people interested in him that are offering him so much more money. Now that Lucha Underground money doesn't have to go to Mystico or Miss Disease and doesn't have to go to Alberto El Patron and stuff, there's more to spread on him. So Lucha and Underground and AAA can compete more, offer more competitively things that the other promotions can. However, in the end, if WWE wants him and if WWE offers him a work schedule that he will like, then he would go back. And I wouldn't even be surprised if that was before WrestleMania. He's not in Lucha Underground now. He hasn't signed, and until he shows up, I am still thinking he's considering all options.
Now, Rey is going to be fighting for the AAA Mega title. It is Rey Mysterio Jr. and Johnny Mundo for the title coming up on, I believe, December 5th.
And they moved it to the 4th, which is a Friday, so that people can get, that they need, like the bookers, can get down there, run the pay-per-view or run the big show, and then head back up to L.A. for the weekend.
Would we be able to read anything into the finish in the sense that if Rey loses, can we suspect that maybe he has plans of going back to WWE? Or
I wouldn't go that far. I would say the odds are that if he loses, it's more likely because this is the direction they're going for the next two big pay-per-views next year, Rey de Reyes and Triple Mania, which they'll be able to plan for now for several months and should be you know, good, solid, big attention and well attended and a good gate show. So I think if we see Rey losing, in fact, that's what I would do. I would put Mundo on it so you could switch the title at a pay-per-view later. I'd put the title on him. That's what I thought they were going to do. If Del Rio was there still, they were going to have him switch the title to set up Mundo doing a hair job down the road.
Wow, you really think that Johnny Mundo would lose his hair?
Yeah.
He does so much acting.
Yeah. You know, you offer somebody $20,000 or whatever the going rate is these days.
Try to get the acting gig first, then they have all the excuse in the world to cut it off.
What?
Grows back.
Well, you got to find an acting gig with the short hair first. Then you have
a reason
to get it cut off in the ring.
Like Kevin Nash did when he lost that hair match and then just got like a nice haircut.
Pretty much.
Well, Antonio Pena was famous for that. I went to a show in 95 or 96 at Wanda La Barrera where he took the hair of...
Actually, Steve, we'll talk about that right after the break because we got to head to a break. Back in a moment, everybody. Observer Live, Sports Byline at USA Radio Network. Radio Network. All right, back here on the show, everybody. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Dr. Lucha is here. And if you can, Dr. Lucha, can you finish your hair story in about 30 seconds?
I can. It was on September 22nd, 1995. I was there live. Nico Zuna, who is a Tonga kid, Sam Fatu, was the one who lost his hair to Perro Aguayo in a match that I saw live, and I insist to you, only had two. They ended the match in the middle of the second fall, even though on TV it clearly showed three. But I was there live, and I thought it saw two. But Pena was famous for letting his guys, especially his big-name foreigners, get off with very little haircut off or just a short haircut and not bald.
All righty. Well, listen, before we wrap it up here today, we've got to plug the Figure Four Weekly, which, of course, the Doctor of Lucha himself writes for every single week. And, Dr. Lucha, what's coming up in the issue this week?
This weekend is a preview, now that the card is out, of the AAA pay-per-view, the Guerra de Titanes, which will occur after this week's issue and before next week's issue. So I've got that and some comments on the Sombra's new career.
And, of course, that's available for everybody who subscribes to WrestlingObserver.com. You can head up there and check that out. Free with your subscription. In addition to that, you get all of the radio shows, commercial-free downloads of Wrestling Observer Live, brand new shows every single day and more. We are completely out of time. I want to thank the Doctor of Lucha, as always, Mike Sempervivi, everybody at Byline. We'll talk to you on Sunday with our Survivor Series preview show. Thanks again, everybody. We'll talk to you again.